few more things to talk with Ed and Chris about, then I'll just turn it over to you, and you can ask them questions. Crop formations. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, Steve Quayle reports that they may have found an enormous creature in the North Pole. He's going to be our guest on Monday right here on Coast to Coast. Ed and Chris Sherwood, our guest now. Ed, the historic 1994 Shoemaker-Levy comet that smashed into Jupiter threw off some interesting images that somehow also showed up as a crop formation. Well, tell me about that.
Indeed, and really, I should pass this to Chris because she was the one that actually discovered
okay.
it and wrote an excellent article on our website detailing this and other related events. So can I pass it to Chris?
You may.
Yeah, sure. In fact, we could probably do an hour just on the 1994 crop formations and how they reflected this comet collision on Jupiter. There were many, many formations, but probably the most striking to the point, not to use a pun, but to the point one is this picture of Jupiter that shows the impact of the largest fragment of that comet. That comet had stretched out into 21 fragments as it approached Jupiter, and the fragments were letter-coded, and this one is called the G impact because the G fragment was the largest one. And this impact created a design, a shockwave design, that appeared 9 days after this collided with Jupiter. It appeared as a crop circle formation, which you see as the next diagram.
Which is almost identical to the actual impact. Look.
Almost identical.
Yeah,
and
that's weird.
Nobody knew this image. It was not in the public consciousness at the time the crop circle formed. And this is true of several other formations that happened that year that reflected aspects of this comet collision, which was historic. It gave us on Earth a vantage point view of what it would be like to see an Earth-killing comet strike a close-by planet, and a real consciousness-raising event, and it was really reflected remarkably in the crop formations, and we find this because we feel it was in the collective consciousness of humanity. People were watching the skies, watching the comet collision as it happened, and it somehow was reflected in many crop formations of that summer.
We feel that it was a historic event.
And you believe that
consciousness.
You believe that formation, though, to be authentic. My point is here that someone sees a picture of the G impact and goes out and makes a crop formation.
Exactly, but they couldn't in this case because there was no picture for them to use.
No
as
way.
Reference.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't out. It wasn't released until many weeks later.
Okay.
It wasn't available. And this formation that appeared, it was over 300 feet, that bigger than a football field in diameter. This formation was tremendous.
It was also called the Shoemaker-Levy 9 comet. And this appeared 9 days after the impact. Plus, it consisted of 9 circles.
Strange.
If you total up the number of circles that make the glyph, there's 9. You know, it's a message. It's reinforcing and affirming that, yes, we do live in a cosmic shooting gallery, and it is part of our cosmic collective wake-up call to realize that we do. And it's part of this big shift that we're going through of, realizing more our environment, both natural and also the fact that we're not alone as intelligent beings.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Ed and Chris Sherwood on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Jeff Tulsa.
Go ahead, Jeff. Great. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I just thank you, George, for your show. I appreciate it so much.
Sure.
Thank you, Ed, Chris, for spending time with us on the air here.
Thanks, Jeff.
My question is, why don't they just do you have an opinion on why they just don't contact us as a whole? I mean, obviously, or allegedly, I mean, they've contacted governments, per show, other guests talk about it. And I know that I've heard a lot about signs over different shows, but why not just stand on land and talk to us? Do you have an opinion about that?
Yeah, I do. I have many ideas as to why that is. There's not just one, but I think that, you know, one reason is because for the most part, they have a policy of non-intervention. We know from our own history that when a more advanced civilization comes into contact with a less, let's say, physically advanced civilization, it invariably follows it up, or rather it affects it in such a way that it brings benefits often, but it also creates a crisis for the culture that it comes into contact with. You know, it causes you to question so many things and reevaluate your perception of reality. And in a sense, that's, of course, what this phenomenon does. And I think that those that have a consideration towards us are doing it and have been doing it gently. They're doing it gently because they need to do it safely, not just for us, but also for them. And because they wanted to be peaceful. They want this open exchange to happen someday, which I feel is coming up on us. But we have to also, on a collective scale, and you know, there are people listening to this program who are already convinced that we're not alone and have had experiences of their own. Well, these people have been reached, but what about all of the others that haven't yet seen something for themselves? And also, in humanity, there is great fear. We're a tremendously fearful race or species, and again, I think this creates tremendous obstacles for, let's say, a spiritual civilization that comes with love and peace, but a high technology and so many things that they could share and teach us. But I think they want this to be a balanced thing. You know, in the past, when extraterrestrials revealed themselves, like in our, I think in our distant past, in our history, we've tended to worship them and think of them as gods. Now we've reached a point in our own evolutionary development where we see them more like they really are, as beings from another other worlds, other environments, other dimensions, if you like. Now we're closer than ever before in our history, I think, to have this global
message, I guess, yeah.
That we're not alone. However, it still has to be done very carefully, because I know from living in England, for example, in a valley where, you know, it's one of the major UFO hotspots in the world, and within minutes of anything appearing, be it a ball plasma or structured craft, there's more than one military helicopter heading straight for it. This kind of response is not necessarily the most positive or productive, and
well, we're not sending a clear message to the originators, are we?
No, and it's also a process of initiation in a way. Again, I know from my own experience that in some ways I was plunged in the deep end right in the get-go. I had a close encounter with a being at the age of 9, which terrified me at the time, but put me on a course where I would examine those things and come to lose my fear. And what a difference it makes to have no fear with the experience. I mean, really, our fears condition our lives so much and our perception of life. But when we succeed to free ourselves from fear, then you can really start to experience what is really there. And again, to go back to the original question, why don't they just land? Well, they've done almost everything but that, and they have made done landings. So there have been landings, but obviously, you know.
I guess we're all looking for the big blitz on television.
We're all looking for the big one, and yeah. Honestly, I do think that we're reaching that time period where we can have it, because there's so many people out with camcorders now. There's so much activity, UFO sightings occurring to make us aware that we're not alone. So much evidence that I think that. You know, that this is going to increase, and the bubble is going to burst at a certain point. And I think that really, before there is mass disclosure from a governmental level, there's going to be a mass exposure of the extraterrestrial reality.
Well, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Yes, this is Victoria from San Francisco.
Hi, Victoria.
Yes, Ed and Chris, I appreciate you being on the program. I think we need more and more like you people that with information. I think, like the preceding caller had said, why are we getting more obvious connection? And I think a lot of it has to do with the media seems to make them so negative, and so many movies like War of the Worlds were terrible fear instead of love. And there is so much information out. They have the UFO disclosure people, and then have you heard of Sheldon Neidl from the Planetary Activation Group? They are coming through with so much information about how they want to come down and be with us in love. But the timing has to be right. So,
exactly. That message has been echoed now for several decades, I think.
And I'm grateful that you're on the air and trying to give this information, and which Sheldon did too, also about the mass UFOs that are all over. And we need to look up in love and have faith that it's all for a spiritual progress, so we can all get along in the world.
Definitely. Even exactly, you said it so right. And even some of the negative experiences, I think, ultimately can teach us spiritual things. Not that they're trying to teach us spiritual things, but we can learn from them and gain spiritual understandings. To say a little bit about the flying humanoids down in Mexico and the fleet, my feeling is, as a UFO ET experiencer, and looking at what's been happening worldwide for many years, I feel, my gut feeling is that the humanoids that are being seen are not the same beings that are operating the crafts that are being seen as the fleets. Mm-hmm. I think we're witnessing more than one civilization making its presence known here, and we have to be, I think, try to be smart about this. Although we want to come, we want the experience to be peaceful and to be with love, both from us and from them, we have to realize that just as there are people on planet Earth, there are probably beings and probably civilizations on different levels of self-knowledge and development, and that maybe not all of them coming here and appearing care about the planet or ourselves necessarily. There may be ones coming for more selfish motivations, and I am a little concerned about some of these flying humanoids over Mexico, for example, because they're being very brazen in their openness. But
in Mexico, at
in
least.
Mexico, but one of the encounters resulted in violence. One of the first sightings that Santiago Uteria made available, made us aware of, and people via the internet, was of a sighting that a flying humanoid count that occurred January last year, where a policeman in Mexico was attacked by the entity after he turned his high beams onto it. Early hours of the morning, a district of Mexico City, Guadalupe, he saw something descend from a tree, hovering just off the ground, and then sit down on the ground, looking like a humanoid figure, and he turned his high beams onto it, which caused great a negative reaction from this particular entity or being, which flew at him and at the windscreen of his patrol car, scared him to death, made him hit the accelerator to get away. He slammed into a brick wall, knocked himself out. This was being heard at the same time by policemen in other patrol cars heading in that area, and there was also an ambulance on its way, which arrived soon after, and this was all filmed. Santiago has done an excellent in-depth report on it, but it's almost like a little reminder, I feel, that we need to know, obviously, who's coming. And since we don't know a great deal about them, really the best guide we have is to see how they act. And if they act in ways that are like controlling or aggressive, then you can be sure these are not the right ones.
Of everything you've studied with regards to this entire phenomena, anything just shock you, Ed, in your research?
Not really. I mean, I've been shocked plenty in my life, by surprising events. But, you know, I've had a few surprising encounters that I wasn't necessarily expecting at the time that definitely were shocking to start off with. But I grew up with this. And I grew up this from early childhood. It's almost been the norm for me to witness parapsychological phenomena, craft, UFOs, plasma, and then and entities, beings. So it's kind of been almost the norm for me. So I'm not as shocked as some might to say a given event.
How about you, Chris?
I can say I did have, as Ed was speaking, I was thinking of the one incident we had where I was pretty terrified. He was not afraid because he'd had this experience before, but several years ago we were in a crop circle at around midnight, and we were doing some photography, trying to photograph some, luminous energy that might be present in the crop circle, and we became aware of a helicopter in the next field, and when we looked up, we saw this helicopter was following a UFO, and this was only about 250 feet from us. It was very close.
Right.
And as soon as apparently the helicopter spotted us with the night vision in the field, it stopped pursuing the UFO, and it came toward us in the field. It turned off its lights so that we had a dark Black Hawk helicopter coming at us just feet above the wheat and about 50 feet away from us, and I was really terrified.
That got to me.
The ET event was fine. It was the human response that was terrifying.
The human helicopter that did you in, huh?
Yeah, were it not for the helicopter, we would have had a tremendous experience probably. But
And we still ended up filming the end of it. It turned out there were two UFOs involved in that incident. The helicopter eventually left us and followed the first one away, and a second UFO then floated into the field next to us, totally silent, completely. It was very low to the ground. It was below the hill line.
Structured object.
A structured object. We filmed it, and other people at another distant location filmed it as well, and it was quite amazing.
How do these choppers get on the scene so fast?
I think they have more than one way of detecting, and sometimes, a UFO can be in the air, and you don't pick it up on radar. But they can probably flick to something else that does, and I think one of the things they probably use is some way of detecting the electromagnetic, particularly geomagnetic energy of the land, because it's been found, for example, I think Paul Devereux, science researcher years ago in Australia when trying to study the I think it was the Min Min light.
Yeah, hold that thought, Ed. We'll be right back. We'll take final phone calls. We'll let you finish that up when we come back. Peter Ward, he's our guest on our next Coast to Coast program. He's a principal investigator for NASA. Well, what does that all mean? Well, you're going to have to listen around tomorrow and find out. Back in a moment. And welcome to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Ed and Chris Sherwood. Ed, why don't you finish that Paul Devereux story, then we'll go back for final calls.
Okay. Very briefly, he was in Australia doing experiments, and he used a ground instrument that registered geomagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that when the ball plasmas appeared, there was a great spike on his geomagnetic device, and I suspect the military have means like that to register these spikes, because I think when the ball plasmas do manifest, they do generate an electromagnetic signature, and to live in a valley where I witnessed more than 90% of the UFOs intercepted by at least one helicopter within several minutes shows that they definitely have more than radar at their disposal.
All right, let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
This is Eric from Vernon.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
From Connecticut, sorry. I just had one real quick question. I was wondering if you ever tried to correlate the Nazca lines to any of the crop circles. I know they're different animals, but have you ever correlated that?
In Peru.
Not correlated, but I think they are different animals. Although there are some similarities in that they're best viewed from above. I think the Nazca lines were used as ceremonial walking meditational spaces and avenues, at least some of them. And so they fall on sacred space, as do the formations. But yes, often over the years I've kind of glanced over at the Nazca lines and wondered, but I don't see a strong correlation.
Could they have been, though, the first crop circles?
Well, I don't think they were the first crop circles, but they were made by people. But there may have been phenomenal events like in Great Britain and other parts of the world, for example. I mean, the average size of a genuine crop circle, simple circle, is practically the same size as your average sacred site in England. So, and where they form and the geometries that they have shown, some of them, I think that there's a definite possibility that ancient man witnessed something perhaps similar to the crop circle phenomenon themselves. Their response to it was to mark out these sacred places.
Are there marked differences between crop circles, the formations, and let's say the way the weed is knocked down? Are there similarities as opposed to man-made crop formations?
Well, there is one basic thing that separates a non-man-made crop circle from one that is man-made, but you need to kind of be one of the first people there to see it, because this evidence is destroyed very quickly, and that is plants bent at 90 degrees without even a crease near to the ground, or sometimes above. I stepped into a formation in 91, and part of the formation, it was a pictogram, included a 60-foot diameter circle, and just the top 4 inches of the mature wheat was bent 90 degrees and rotated, forming a circle. So you couldn't even step into it because it was only about 4 inches deep in the crop. That is definitely an indication of something non-man-made. The human-made circles typically crease, sometimes break off, but mostly crease. They don't break every stem by any means, which is, some people have misidentified that or seen that as an indication that because it's not broken, it's only crimped, that is probably a sign of it being genuine, but it's actually not. We had a formation at Laguna Canyon in 96 where you could see the natural bend of the plant, and there's a big article on our website, on our articles page, all about it, where you could see the plants were like steamed into position.
Okay, let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, good evening, or good morning.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hey, my name is Greg, I'm from St. Louis. George, I'd just like to compliment you guys on a great show.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank
and,
you.
I'm curious, when you, as your guest, when you have a knowing of what you know, and it seems to me, it's like simplicity to you, yes or no? Hello?
Hello. Do we have that, do you say?
Have a knowing, is that what you said?
What you're speaking on, it, and you know what you know. This is not a, is this basically theory, or is this something that you know?
No, this is, most of what we're saying is what we know from either our own direct experience or many years of research.
Okay,
yes.
Correct.
They're not speculating.
Right. So what I'm saying, but when you come to a knowing such, when you come to a level of knowing what you know, it's simplicity to you, yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My question, my problem is, how do you not just, go lulu, what I'm saying? Because everybody around you doesn't understand. Because I understand certain things cannot be told in words.
Sure.
But when I know something, I know. When I don't know, I hush, I listen, I observe, try to gain more knowledge. But what you guys are speaking is simplicity. All we have to do is real simple. Very, very simple. Come together as one.
Is that the main message here, Ed and Chris?
It's one of them. It certainly is one of the major messages. And I think the miracles that have been appearing in the fields from the divine source, we mustn't think of this as something external, totally external from us. I think it is. It is. We are part of that process. We are co-creators of this phenomenon, and it's also a part of our coming of age, I think, as a species on this planet, as a collective consciousness. You know, we walk around this world feeling so inside ourselves, so individualized, and in some ways alone, but consciousness is not a thing, it's a state, and it's not just individual, it's collective. And it operates with laws and forces that function on a collective scale as well as a individualized scale. And I think the message that we are all one has been echoed in this phenomenon in many different ways.
Yes. And I think we as a species on this planet have been behaving like we are alone. We're not respecting the planet. We're not thinking about its future survival or the future survival of its animals or its even our grandchildren or our children, with what we're doing to the environment through our really selfish, you know, speaking in kind of a collective way, our selfish use of resources and disrespecting of the planet and its life forms. And this is something we really must learn or perish, you know.
It's also, I think, the message of the phenomenon, the genuine crop circle phenomenon, that when I say genuine, I mean from the primary source.
But I'm not sure they're going to step in and save us, Ed and Chris.
I think it's going to be not like that. We have to save ourselves for the most part.
Right.
I think they're here to help us help ourselves. But there's a great obstacle in the way between us and them, and that is our fear. And they've been trying to educate us in gradual ways by keep appearing over here and over there and over there. So we finally, if we don't have the direct experience ourselves, we hear it so much or we see so much evidence that it begins to, stimulate the change that needs to take place on Earth.
West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
We are well, thanks.
Good. Hi there.
This is Brett from Lodi, California. I was just wondering what the bottom intent is on these crop circles. I'm not real educated on them. And what is it, a language or numerical signs or something we don't even understand? What's the bottom intent they're giving us?
Well, the signs, I think, are very understandable once we get our heads around them, and they're definitely numeric, geometric, symbolic. They have other aspects, too, like the biophysics, and all of these different things can teach us something and awaken us to other realities. And I think that's what these are here to do. They're even crop circles created by an ET source. Excluding, let's say, those ETs that just made a landing mark because they were after something else and they left and they didn't care what we thought about it. But I think that there are definitely even ET events that leave behind evidence for us to question. Our scientific community leads us in a certain direction in this world and in such a strong way that we often forget the spiritual. And I think these things are happening, these modern-day miracles that have been happening for the last 20 years, fulfilling prophecy, are to awaken us.
Do you remember the crop formation of a couple of years ago that had the alien face?
Yeah, big man-made formation.
Would you think that was inauthentic?
No, definitely not.
Man-made?
No. Remember, the movie Signs was very much the rage, and it was like a big advertisement.
Yes. They paid some farmer to use his field, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. In fact,
the human circle makers are the ones who are profiting the most from this. They get quite large fees for making logos and fields for different
companies and stuff.
Well, all the researchers are self-funded and out there trying to, try to gather evidence with no resources.
Wildcard Line, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Mary. I'm calling from Albany.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Great show tonight, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to know a few things. One, what is the attraction, like, why don't we not see, like, UFOs in, like, say, like, New York? What's the attraction to, like, Mexico or Nevada or wherever? And two, could these symbols that they've been doing in the crop circles, whether they be man-made or being channeled man-made or being alien made, could they be some kind of a map or something?
To take the last question first, we haven't found any evidence from our investigation that there is a map being indicated, or if there, you know, if there have been some made by some formations made by an extraterrestrial source, and some of those are the hardest ones to decipher if they're pictographic at all, and probably because they're writing their own appendix and we don't know what that really is. But the other ones, you can definitely tell. But again, why more UFO activity over Mexico City? I think because the Mexican people as a whole, that includes the media, the government, the military, the civilian population, as a whole, more than any other country, has been responding the most positive overall to the fact that their airspace is visited by other intelligences. And that is the kind of response that the ETs that come here with peace need to come closer, to reveal themselves to us, to not scare us, to not make us feel belittled by their technology or their knowledge or whatever. I think that we're all different equals, and we could probably teach them some things too. So to start off, we need to acknowledge their existence. UFOs have been appearing over major centers of population around the world, including sightings in New York City. It's just that they are more open in Mexico right now, I think, because they are acknowledging their existence.
So they feel wanted.
They feel they exist, you know. And this is the other thing, and a very important point. I think each and every one of us can encourage this process to accelerate. It doesn't have to move along at a snail's pace. We can really change this if we do things to encourage it. And something I didn't mention earlier was what a close encounter of the fifth kind is. A close encounter of the fifth kind, in my interpretation, is a self-initiated encounter.
Like what you've done.
Like what I've done many times, and some other people have done. But in my experience of contact with an extraterrestrial intelligence, and even experiences of plasma and the divine source in a way, is that there's a process you go through, and the other intelligences initiate that up to a point. But what they do is in respect to what you do, too. So if you recognize them for who they are, mm-hmm. and acknowledge them, then they're going to recognize you. If you keep saying they don't exist, then maybe you force them to have to keep it at a certain level, and you encourage them to go to perhaps others who are more open. But I think that we're reaching a point in human history where, because of mass media, because of the idea of other intelligence existing in the universe, it's common now in television programming, because of all the footage, because of all the events, we're reaching that kind of collective...
consciousness?
Yeah, critical mass. And there's going to be enough people aware. Well, I think there's enough people aware already, but maybe a little more time has to go before they can fully reveal themselves. And when they do that, I still think they're going to do it safely, which means probably most of them are going to stay up in the sky, stay for a few days, a few nights for us all to see, and then they're going to disappear. I mean, this is, I'm not saying this purely from my own right. inner feelings. It's also coming from other sources.
Sooner than later, Ed?
Yes, because the planet, because Mother Earth is suffering big time. We can't keep doing global warming causing effects and think we'll be okay. Maybe, you know, some of us will be okay in our lifetime, but our children won't. And, of course, the planet is much too precious to let it go down through our actions like that. So,
and if they don't, though, reveal themselves to us, does that mean they just don't care?
I would say so at this point, definitely. Yeah.
Then they have perhaps another agenda.
Say again?
Then they have another agenda.
Yes, and I think some of them do. And that's why we have to be discerning. And that's why we have to know that UFOs, crop circles, psychic phenomena, you know, you look at the subject as a whole, you realize that there's ordinary things that you have to differentiate from the extraordinary to be sure of what you're studying. And then I think when you get to the bottom of the crop circle subject, you find it spiritual. When you get to the bottom of the UFO subject, you find it spiritual. And the same with parapsychological phenomena. And that we need to proceed in a positive way with this. And we particularly need to, I mean, I think if America started to really increase its programming, for example, showing the footage that just exists thus far from Mexico and other places, just from the last 5 years, awful lot more people would be aware and prepared for something bigger to happen.
How can people track your research?
The best way to follow us right now is through our website, cropcircleanswers.com. We're working on several books, and we're working on a lot of articles for the website too, so you can find out much more about what we've said tonight from our website, and but know too that that's only a fraction of what we've yet to reveal.
All right. Well, hopefully sooner than later, Ed and Chris, whatever happens, happens in our lifetime, because I'd like to be a witness to it.
Oh, definitely. We would too, very much.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you so much, George.
Thank you, George, and all your listeners,
yes,
too.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
Okay, very good. Ed and Chris Sherwood, they've devoted their life to crop formation investigations, and they believe that sooner than later, there's going to be some major revelation. Be kind of interesting when it happens, doesn't it? Well, as I told you, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk with a NASA investigator. I wonder what he's got up his sleeve. If you need to email me, that's simple too. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. And then, of course, Friday, it'll be our Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines with an hour of Linda Moulton Howe, who'll be live in Las Vegas at a UFO conference. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.